Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Welcome into the Take the North podcast presented by Odyssey. I am Adam Stasinski. I produce this podcast. I'm alongside Dan Wiederer, who covers the Bears for the Chicago Tribune. He's at Hallis Hall as we speak. A much calmer Hallis Hall this week, Dan, than when we spoke this time a week ago, as things have steadied a little bit after they got a win against the Rams last Sunday.
Yeah, you heard me last week talk about how I wasn't ready for 1-3. Thankfully, the Bears spared me from that existence, and it has been a much calmer week here at Hallis Hall as the Bears continue to make their improvements, but doing so with much less stress and anxiety attached to it. They obviously have a very friendly game coming up Sunday, which we'll get into in a bit, as the start of a pretty friendly stretch of games here in their schedule that they have to take advantage of. And so hopefully they're finding the right mind frame. Hopefully they're taking some comfort in the peace that has existed here at Hallis Hall this week, and they can push forward.
I don't think anyone that covers this team was ready to do a 1-3 week. So glad they got the win and we can look ahead here. We'll kick things off because everything is not perfect at Hallis Hall. It's just easier to talk about under the guise of a win. We'll kick things off with our opening drive.
It's time for the opening drive.
All right. So like we said, Dan, things a lot calmer this week, but things were not perfect. So let's start here. The continued progress of Caleb Williams. You can go a lot of different directions with this, but what would you say we're seeing currently from Caleb Williams? There was a lot of talk this week from what I gathered at his His willingness to take his checkdowns.
Sure.
And not make mistakes in a winnable game.
We'll hear a little bit more on that from Shane Waldron when we get into our game review. And I think that is a big part of the discussion right now, because it is a young quarterback learning how to function successfully inside the NFL game. And what you've seen here in the month of September were two wins where Caleb Williams didn't have eye-opening production but took care of the football, and the Bears wound up winning. What you saw in the two losses were games where Caleb Williams turned the ball over a combined five times, and despite having the ball with a chance to go ahead late in the game in both those games, the Bears ended up losing. And so there's a lesson within there about understanding the importance of ball security in this league, and what does that mean on a play-by-play basis? It means you're calculated with the chances you take, and the risks you take have to be smart risks that you take. And so what you saw against the Rams last week, Studs, I think was a quarterback who knew how within the speed of that particular game to get to his checkdowns, to be happy with an 8-yard completion, 11-yard completion, a 12-yard completion here and there, just to keep the Bears momentum moving forward. Ultimately, they get a win against an inferior opponent. And what you've heard in really the 4 or 5 days since is just some praise from inside the building here, coaches and players alike, about understanding the value of those things, about being able to find the check down. Matt Eberflus continues to talk about Caleb being a point guard and distributing to the playmakers around him and not feeling like he's got to make all the big plays himself. You saw that against the Rams. It should be a building block, but as you and I both know, you have to kind of work that balance beam a little bit to the point where you don't get so overly cautious that you're missing some shots down the field. And I do think there were a few plays within the Rams game where you say, okay, they got a gain out of it, but there might have been a bigger gain down the field. How does a rookie quarterback navigate that? How does the coaching staff allow him to navigate that in the weeks and months to come as he furthers his development?
Right. And I think, you know, one specific play that got talked about a lot when, you know, the people that break down all 22 started breaking down the all 22 film was a play action where Caleb got to his check down really quick and hit Cole Kmet for, there was a third down, right? So he hit Cole Kmet. It was a first down. I couldn't remember, but couldn't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, he hits Cole Kmet. They get a first down. And then you see on the all 22, wow, Rome Odunze is running wide open. I mean, he was open pretty quick. And so that's exactly what you were just talking about, where it's like, hey, okay, good job getting the first down. And they did eventually score a touchdown on that drive, which I think you need to keep in mind. They did score a touchdown on that drive, but it could have happened a lot faster if he, and what's weird is he does look downfield. So you don't know why exactly he didn't make that throw to Rome, but that's exactly the balance you're talking about. It's, hey, you know, they drew up a shot for you. Don't be afraid to take it when they draw up the shot and it's there.
It's going to be really interesting to monitor this going forward, because I do think it is a really delicate balance. And we've seen a lot of quarterbacks sort of find their way to the unhealthy side of this, where all of a sudden you kind of neuter your aggressive instincts. I don't think that's happened yet with Caleb. I keep coming back to the 22-yard completion he hit to Cole Kmet late in the game when they were trying to pad that 2-point lead as an indication that he still, like, when he sees something he likes, the ball's going there and he's throwing it with aggression into NFL windows and making completions. But if we start to see more and more of these check downs and fewer of these shots downfield, then it's worth continuing to revisit this discussion, because their Bears are going to need to become more explosive as a passing attack in the near future. It does not have to happen this week. It does not have to happen before the bye week, but eventually you need to have those chunk plays to create that sort of identity that you need as an offense. And so it is going to be interesting to see what happens there. Married up with this conversation, Studs, obviously, is the production of DJ Moore through the month of September. He's up there, I think, 11th in the league in catches with 22. But his production, he's 43rd in yards with fewer than 200. I think it's at 189 through four games. And so what we've seen early on is a lack of cohesion between DJ Moore and Caleb Williams. First play of the Colts game, there's a throw where Caleb throws it expecting back shoulder, and DJ's still running his route, and it's a total disconnect. And you go, well, that's interesting, because this is the first play of the game, usually a scripted play or a preferred look, and your quarterback and your top receiver aren't on the same page. Mark Potash asked DJ Moore about that last week, and DJ referred to it as unusual that there was such a disconnect in that regard. Well, then that gets magnified on Sunday against the Rams late in the first half. Caleb was final throw of the first half, in fact, when he's got DJ Moore open down the right sideline for what looks like it should be a 22-yard touchdown pass. But DJ, against the cover two look, bends his route back outside. Caleb expects him to go more vertical and throws a bullet more toward the inside of the field. It's a bad incompletion, and the Bears settle for a field goal. That moment, I'm sure you would agree, is a little bit of a snapshot at two players who clearly aren't on the same page right now, and it's obviously triggered a larger discussion on what that means for both those players and the offense at large.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's undeniable that those two in particular have not been quite on the same page in the first four games this season. You just talked about the two biggest examples we can see right there. There's a couple things here that I would like to touch on before we have some audio from DJ about that specific play. So, number one, at least this is a fixable problem. Like, this is something that, you know, early on with a rookie quarterback and a veteran wide receiver, they just need to get on the same page and make sure that when they see, because they both saw the same thing and they both knew that that route was going to be open. They just disagreed in the moment on how to get how to complete the ball. And so that's fixable, and that is it all comes down to is reps and communication, right? So that's the good thing. The other thing here is I dislike some of the conversation that has been happening around DJ Moore the last couple days. And it seems ever since a couple games ago, the Texans game, when there was that zoomed in snapshot of DJ really frustrated after an incompletion, and, you know, he gets asked about it all the next week, and then he showed more frustration after this particular play against the Rams. And I think that people that don't listen to DJ or talk to DJ as much as like you do or listen to him like I do understand what this guy's all about. When I see those moments, I see just a player frustrated that they're not able to get the play done. I don't see a player that's trying to show up his quarterback, as Daniel Jeremiah said after the Texans game. And I don't see a player that's like that's angry at Caleb, more angry at the situation. And so I that's the part of the conversation. I know this is kind of nuanced, but I think it's understandable for a player to show frustration in a moment which anyone would be frustrated by.
Well, so I think you're right that there is nuance to this. And I will say this, that DJ is a little bit of a different cat. And usually when we talk to him at the podium every Wednesday, we typically leave those sessions with a lot of information and then a lot to interpret. And DJ can be hard to interpret sometimes. You know, you've heard me talk about Cole Kmet, Jalen Johnson, these guys who are directly to the point with how they express themselves, and there's never any gray area. You know exactly what they're saying and how they're saying it. DJ leaves you sometimes trying to figure out exactly what he's meaning. And we'll hear from him in a second, which will help further our discussion. And so I don't have any worries about this right now. I think that that you've got good instincts in this regard and saying, like, look, like, this is a veteran player who wants to see the offense break out for team success so that he can stop living this career existence of being stuck in mediocrity, which he's been in for his whole career in Carolina and Chicago. And so you understand why that urgency is there for DJ Moore. I do want to keep it on the keep an eye on list for us, because I don't know yet whether DJ is fully managing his patience in the way that he needs to with a rookie quarterback. Again, look, like, he's had to go through the young quarterback, change in quarterback, different quarterback reboots so many times in his career that you can understand why it's like, really, I got to do this again. And, and at times it's going to be very frustrating because you leave big plays on the field because a quarterback doesn't see the same thing you see. So I want to watch it. I want to watch it for the next month and a half and figure out if it persists. Can they iron out some of these disconnect moments? Can they figure out how to get on the same page, which is the phrase that was used here so often in the last 10 days? And then we'll revisit this conversation in the middle of November and figure out if DJ's handling his part of this equation the way he needs to be as a captain of this football team and a guy that they've invested in very highly. So let's swing it back now to the play that we were just talking about, because Caleb was very clear that what he saw was a look with, I mean, really, it's a pretty standard cover two look. There's not a lot of craziness to it. Cornerback jumps outside on the snap and DJ does the only thing he can do, which is take an inside release. But the typical, from folks that I've talked to, the typical instinct for a receiver in that situation is once you're by the corner, you bend it outside to give the quarterback a little bit more room to throw it away from the safety. Well, Caleb saw something different and thought that it would be better for DJ to stay vertical and throws his shot there. Everybody had a chance to weigh in on this conversation this week. Caleb had his say. Here's what DJ Moore had to say about it with a little twist at the end that's worth a little bit more discussion.
Hey, what did you see in that particular instance that made you take it back out?
It's a hole shot, so I was thinking he played outside. I had to go inside, wind back out, and then assess where the safety was. And he thought I was going to just run straight. And now we know we're going to go the Caleb way, and we're going to get it right.
Are you the type of, when you talk about getting on the same page, how what does that entail here? You know, through the time that you're together.
Just growing through the reps. I mean, we never had a clouded rep like that, and where the corner was trailing still. So it was pretty different. So it was, like I said, it was on me. Really wasn't knowing what he was thinking, but I was thinking one thing, like going back out. And I mean, we got it fixed now. So
Studs, a couple things here. First off, I asked DJ Moore a week ago, before that game was even played, if his patience was being tested by some of the things that they've been enduring in the first month of the season. And he said, you know, I'm not really one to have my patience tested, but I'm like 2 inches below the line, which was an indication that his patience is being tested significantly. You hear in the first part of that soundbite when he says, we're going to go the Caleb way and we're going to get it right, that he's feeling almost a force from within the building that's telling him that he better acclimate to the quarterback rather than vice versa. Well, that can become a tense tug of war here if the quarterback isn't being held to the same level of accountability that the receiver is. And so that's why I say I want to keep an eye on this for the next month and a half, because it'd be easy to let DJ off the hook and say there's nothing in his background that says he's going to, you know, go down the route of being an easily rattleable, you know, diva or whatnot. But you want to try to get a sense for the frustration level that comes with having to meet the quarterback somewhere in the middle, right? And I think that particular quote left some people scratching their head, being like, what is he actually insinuating there? And I'm curious what you took away from that.
Let me put it this way. Like, I think when he says we're going to do it the Caleb way, like, I didn't have a problem with him. Like, you know, look, yeah, you're always on the lookout for friction, I guess. I don't believe that that's this. I think that is
him saying, I'm going to do what he wants because he's the quarterback. And I don't like, you're right. Like, there is a risk here in like, hey, is Caleb, I should say, getting more preferential treatment. I think in a case where the quarterback wants the receiver to run a route a certain way, as long as the receiver isn't pushing that, as long as the receiver doesn't disagree and say, I think you're going to get picked off if that happens, that's where you need to have a conversation. But if they look and they agree, they're like, oh yeah, we can get it completed like that. I saw an interesting clip actually that came out. I believe this was from this week, this past Sunday. Matt Ryan talking on CBS after the Jets lost to the Broncos, and the Jets only put up 9 points. Aaron Rodgers struggled. The other only Jets offense just struggled in general. And Bill Cowher was asking Matt Ryan, like, as a quarterback who, and this is different because this is Matt Ryan, a guy who had a lot of success in the league. And they asked him, like, as someone else like Rodgers who had a lot of success in the league, what do you talk about with your receivers when it comes to getting on the same page and stuff like that? And Matt Ryan says, you got to do it my way. Now it's different because that's Matt Ryan. And
Caleb, he won an MVP.
Caleb Williams is not there yet. But like, my point here is, if they agree that, yes, we can get the ball completed this way, I don't have a problem with him going, yeah, we're just going to do it how Caleb wants and make him as comfortable as possible. And I don't think DJ has a problem doing that. But like you said before, it's something to keep an eye on. Right now, I don't see it as a problem. Right now, this is them just figuring things out.
Yeah, so we'll keep it on the keep an eye on list. And somebody said to me this week that the only thing that matters is that they get on the same page. I pushed back on that a little bit and said that's the biggest thing that matters is that they get on the same page. But the route they take to get on the same page does matter a little bit because you want to make sure, I think you use the word friction, that it's very friction-free in the way that you get there. Now, obviously, there's going to be some of this within the growing pains of a young quarterback and a new offense and everybody trying to get there. But it is something that the Bears need to have happen, and they need to have it happen relatively soon to keep what we believe is a team with realistic playoff aspirations alive, you know. And so that's where the stakes of this season again have sort of heightened a lot of these discussions that for the typical rookie quarterback who's playing on a team that's expected to finish last and lose 11 games, this is just figured to be an inevitable part of the process. The Bears are trying to win games at the same time. And so every little bit of failure that they experience gets magnified. Thankfully for them last week against the Rams, they were able to win the football game. Otherwise, I think DJ Caleb would have been this bigger national, you know, first take drama session that people would have turned into more than it needs to be. I think the discussion here is a healthy one to figure out where they go from here.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, look, it's ultimately also important that they get on the same page because DJ Moore is not going anywhere anytime soon, and neither is Caleb. So, you know, they need to figure out when they get these looks what we're going to do. And, you know, hey, look, you know, this is something else. Like, if a few weeks down the line, we see the exact same kind of play and they complete it for a touchdown, we'll look back and say, hey, well, this is when they figured it out back in week 4 against the Rams. So we'll go ahead and – oh, you guys have anything else there, Dan, before we move on?
Yeah, I'm going to throw one more thing, and it'll build our bridge to our game preview and prediction segment. But the good news for these two guys is they're going Sunday to Soldier Field to play a Panthers defense that is bad and injury depleted. They don't have Derek Brown. They don't have Shaq Thompson. They've been really – bad against the run. They've struggled to defend the pass. They've been terrible inside the red zone, worse than the NFL, not so good on third down. And so when you talk about an opportunity here to be able to find some of your footing and find that rhythm, good opponent to do it against at home at Soldier Field on Sunday.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. Bad, injured. And the Panthers had 19 guys on their injury report today, Thursday, which is even 4 weeks into the season is at any point in the season. That's wild. That's wild. So, all right, we'll go ahead and move on to our predictions and what to look for. All right. We know the opponent. We've talked about it. Bears, Panthers, week 5 coming up at Soldier Field. What is number one on your what to watch for in this game, Dan?
So I'm going to start in an unorthodox place, and it's the return game, because I have a feeling that when I sit down in the press box at Soldier Field on Sunday evening to do our post-game pod and you sit down to join me on that one, that we're going to have something from the special teams operation of the day that is going to be notable in this game. The Carolina Panthers are a team under special teams coordinator Tracy Smith that believes in its ability to kick off and cover. and they believe in their ability to take kickoffs out of the end zone as well. Raheem Blackshear leads the NFL right now with the number of kickoff returns, 12 of the 14 that the Panthers have brought out so far, and they've also given opponents 10 opportunities to return the football. So it's going to be really interesting to watch the chess match in the return game on Sunday to see how that unfolds. Footnote to this, DeAndre Carter missed Wednesday's practice with a ribs injury. He was back on the field as a limited participant on Thursday. If he's able to get on the field, you feel much better about the Bears' ability to handle their part of that equation in the return game. But if DeAndre Carter is limited in any significant fashion, then you have to figure out, okay, what are the Bears' plan B? But I do think that this is an interesting special teams matchup. Oh, by the way, to add on to that discussion, Johnny Hecker, one of the most renowned fake punt passers in NFL history, is coming to town with the Panthers. He tried one last week against the Bengals, actually threw a really, really nice pass down the middle to Felipe Franks that got broken up by the Bengals. Always got to be on guard for that, too. So the return game and the special teams operation, put a little note in your notebook for when we revisit this discussion on Sunday evening.
I like that we're starting with special teams here. And yeah, Johnny Hecker, man, that guy is so annoying to play against, because you just never know when he's gonna fake it. And it's one of those, you know, if you're in constant what they call punt safe against that guy. Like, you're always like, it's almost to the point that I would just leave my defense on the field against him.
Right.
Yeah, you know, like, I know they're probably not gonna do that. That's something you do in like high school. I don't think they would ever do that in the pros, but. Yeah, like in high school, anytime we had a team where we think that they do goofy stuff with their punts, we're like, we're just leaving the defense on the field and we're not going to deal with this. But yeah, you know, always got to watch out for him. As far and real quick on the return game, I'm the fact that DeAndre Carter was back limited. Usually, unless there's a setback, usually that means he's trending towards playing, so that's a good sign, right? I'm not as worried about the punt return game if he's out. Because what I would do is I would put Roma Dunze back there and say fair catch every ball. But I'm not putting you're not putting Velus back there. But if he's hurt, that does bring the Velus Jones conundrum back into question. Would the Bears trust Velus Jones to be active and or return kicks if they're without DeAndre Carter in this game?
Fantastic question, one they don't want to answer, right? Velus has been active for the last 3 weeks, and it just feels like it's trending in that direction. Give DeAndre Carter a lot of credit for gutting this out to this point. He should be ready to go Sunday, which will mitigate a little of this. One little footnote on the special teams topic. Richard Hightower still hasn't uncorked a fake for us in his time as Bears coordinator.
Oh, he hasn't.
I bring that up since we're on the topic of fakes, because it seems like worth mentioning that, remember last year, the Thursday night game against Carolina, Matt Eberflus promised that he had a little something up his sleeve.
I'm just saying,
but is there something up their sleeve at some point? If you want to really bolster the cult following of special teams player of the week, Torrey Taylor, what about a little fake here? What about something a little fun on Sunday against
the
Panthers
run the ball.
To get things going?
Yeah, I say let him run the ball. Why not? That would be great. I like that. Something to watch for. A fake from either team. Okay, this next part here I know is going to be a bit of a follow-up to what we were talking about in the first part of the podcast, and that's on the being on the lookout for shot plays from the offense. Now, like we said, this defense has been poor against the pass, and they have not been able to rush the passer. You would think that that sets up a good opportunity to take some shots down the field.
The Bears are last right now in explosive passing plays. I think they have 6 of 20 plus so far. 2 of them came last week. One was a screen and one was that dart to Komet that we've talked about a couple times now. You need to find more explosion in your pass game. And so Caleb's ability to navigate this now, to understand when to light the wick of the cannon and when to not, is a big deal. Now, the soundbite we're about to hear from Shane Waldron is him discussing the 12-play, 74-yard touchdown drive that the Bears had in the third quarter last weekend. I think that might be the same drive they had, the check down that you mentioned earlier to Komet when Dunze had broken deep down the middle of the field. I can't be for certain. I'm not sure, but I do know that drive was efficient, and it was no negative plays. They had one incompletion and a run for no gain, but no penalties, no sacks, no runs for negative yardage, and they just kept the forward momentum going. And so within Shane's evaluation of that particular drive, he drops a little something in there that I think is worth following up on. Let's hear from Shane Waldron right now on that particular drive and what it meant.
combination of playing efficient in the run game, our guys really started to feel the run game, staying in phase, running backs, O-line, so we're getting positive plays in those. And then also the element of shot call doesn't always mean shot taken. If a defense makes a good call on a play, Caleb did a really nice job of taking a check down to Swift, and then all of a sudden it goes now from a first and 10 to another first and 10 on a check down. We know explosives will happen within the context of the game, but playing efficient football, that's what's going to lead us to playing good complementary football, and that drive was a really primary example of that.
Shot call doesn't mean shot taken. That's one I filed away in the back of my mind to try to get a feel for how Caleb handles it. It marries up with the discussion we had in the first segment about trying to find the healthy balance of taking risks when they're there and being smart when they're not. That's going to be a big part of Caleb Williams' development. I do think also, along with this conversation, DeAndre Swift got a lot of praise last week for the way he ran the football, but his 7 catches for 70-plus yards the other day were a big deal in getting the offensive locked, and he did it in a number of different ways. He caught a screen, he caught a check down, he caught a scramble drill pass. He was doing it in a lot of different ways, and so that's interesting as part of this conversation, but ultimately, this comes down to the evolution of Caleb Williams and how he progressively works into this mentality of when to take shots and when to not take them. And so you hear one of the coaching points here inside of Hallis Hall being shot call doesn't mean shot taken.
Yeah. And I really like that. I like that you picked that out here, Dan, because I'm really anxious to continue watching the way that Caleb evolves because, all right, so the idea of shot called doesn't mean shot taken. One of the interceptions he threw against the Colts was a shot that he took to Rome Odunze. Now, you could argue that Rome could come down with that pass, but ultimately it got intercepted, and that's what matters. So the idea that, hey, on that particular play, just check it down maybe. And so him figuring this out, and I think the evolution that we're going to see with Caleb is once this starts to click, which I think it will, just because he's such a smart guy and he's got so much talent in the way he sees the game. To me, he understands what he's seen for the most part. And so I think that eventually this is going to click. And once it does, I think it's going to click. I keep waiting for these moments, and sorry, this is becoming a bit of a tangent, but I keep waiting in these moments where he hits on a big pass, the Cole Kmet play, the Rome Odunze catch, the 40-plus yarder against the Colts, where it's like, okay, here we go. Here we go.
Yep.
Here we go. But it's just, development isn't linear. So you see these flashes and flashes and flashes. So I think eventually it's going to click and it's going to be great. But right now we're just watching him figure it out. And so like we've been talking about here, the idea of, okay, this shot is there. Do I take the check down? And he's got to just figure out what that balance is. And ultimately, I think that's going to be confidence. Like once he understands the confidence of, okay, that shot's there, I'm going to rip it.
Yep.
I think that's what we have to get to. And I think that's ultimately the next step that we're looking for here.
Listen, this is patience testing. It's patience testing for the fans. It's patience testing for the players. It's patience testing for the coaches. They just have to find a way to climb this mountain, and do it steadily without being rattled by feeling impatient at times. So we'll see where that goes on Sunday.
And so the last point here before we make our predictions is the run defense for the Bears the last couple weeks especially hasn't been great. Jonathan Taylor had a pretty good day against them. Kyren Williams had a pretty good day himself. And in fact, I felt like the Rams in the fourth quarter, Sean McVay got a little outside himself, and particularly on their second to last drive, I felt like he kind of got away from the run more than he needed to, but that's in the past now. So Bears run defense versus a Carolina run offense that is one of the bright spots of this team.
Yeah. So there's two parts of this conversation. The first part is the league's best rushing defense from 2023. The Bears have now dropped into the bottom half of the league. They're 18th in yards allowed per game, 19th in yards allowed per attempt, and they need to shore that up soon to be the high level defense that they promised they would be going into the season. Now, it pairs up with a matchup against a Panthers offense that's been resurgent since they made the switch from Bryce Young to Andy Dalton, and they've been particularly so on the ground. And Eric Washington came into his Thursday news conference and highlighted the offensive line and Chuba Hubbard as the two pieces of this Panthers offense that really are the engine of what's making things go right now. Chuba Hubbard, back-to-back 100-yard games the last 2 weeks against the Raiders and the Bengals. So you have to find a way now to tackle him. He's a guy that's going to get yards after contact. He's a guy that's going to challenge you with the way he hits his holes and goes strong. And the Bears defense just hasn't been up to their own standard at stopping the run through the first month of the season. Real good test on Sunday, and how they respond to it, I think, will be really, really instrumental in which direction this game goes.
I think that is probably the number one thing. If you're a Bears, rooting for the Bears, that's the number one thing that you have your eye on in this game is, are they going to do better against their run? And something that Brian Baldinger this morning on The Score brought to my attention, when, because he was asked about this, he said, you know, look, the last 2 weeks they've played really good running backs, and, you know, especially Jonathan Taylor, he's like, look, they had him and he just got them a couple times. And yeah. So he was saying, basically, to sum up what he was getting at is he didn't dislike their run fits. He felt like they were getting beat by good backs. And he said that the Panthers backs have talent, but they're not as talented as the last two guys they faced. So that is something that I think is worth keeping in mind and seeing if that comes to fruition. Something else that your colleague Brad Biggs brought up this week was that, and this is on the negative side, he felt like the Bears' second unit on the defensive line hasn't been playing the run well. So the first unit's been largely okay, but it's the second unit that's been getting burnt. So that's the other part of this that I'm going to be watching when it comes to the run game this week.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And so that leads us right into our prediction, which I think we might be unified this week on which direction we're leaning.
Yes. So I'll go ahead and go first here. I am going to take the Bears in this one. I think as we've been getting that here, hinting at, I should say, they're just the better team. Mm-hmm. And this is a game that at home against an inferior opponent that has been playing better since they elevated Andy Dalton to the starting quarterback role. They're so beat up. They're missing a bunch of key players. They just lost Adam Thielen, who was arguably their best receiver last week. This would be an unacceptable loss. This is a game you have to have. If you're who you think you are, and this is what I was talking about last week too, of holding them up to the standard that they want to be, you have to win this game. And I think you have to win it by, you don't have to win it by double digits. I think it would be great to see them win it by double digits. So I'm going to go ahead and pick them winning this one 27-16. I would love to see the Bears offense get to 30 points, but I got to see it before I can predict it. So I do think they're going to be able to move the ball increasingly better as compared to last week. If they can't, then something got messed up, because this is a defense you should be able to move the ball against. And on the other side of the ball, I think that they will be able to hold the pin. And look, here's the key. You know that the Panthers run game is good. Get up on them double digits in the first half, and they won't be able to run the ball the way that they want to. That's your game script here. Get up on them, put them away early, and please God, don't make us sweat this one out like we have the last 4 weeks. So yeah, I got the Bears winning 27-16.
So this is the NFL. There is no such thing as a layup, but this to me is a loosely contested 12-foot jumper. Square your shoulders, bend your knees, follow through, make the jumper, right? This is right. It. Like, we would love to believe that the Bears have crossed into the stage that when they have matchups like this on their home turf, by the way, league best 7-game home winning streak right now to continue, that they take care of business. It's a total take care of business moment at Soldier Field on Sunday. It sets you up for an enjoyable road trip to London. We know how beat up the Panthers defense is. We know how bad they are. That should give the offense a little bit of an opportunity to play the game on their own terms. And then you just got to make plays when there are plays to be made there. The Bears, I think, are there. I think they're ready to check this box. And so I've got Bears 23, Panthers 17.
All right. So we both picked the Panthers. Excuse me. We both picked the Bears to beat the Panthers. And if so, they would move to 3-2 on the season. Okay. Let's move on here.
our Move the Chains segment this week. This has been another big topic of discussion, and I think it's always going to be a topic of discussion when these two teams play going forward. We'll look back here on the trade in 2023 of the number one overall pick, which sent the number one pick to the Panthers and gave the Bears a whole lot of stuff. So a lot of that has been discussed this week at House Hall, Dan.
March 10th, 2023. I remember it well. I was taking a day off. I was trying to take a nap.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We were away. I was in a hotel room taking a nap when the trade went down. And at the time, all this trade was the number one pick going to Carolina, a bunch of picks coming back to the Bears, and DJ Moore was the only known commodity, right? There was one player involved in the trade at the time. The Panthers ended up choosing Bryce Young with that number one pick, and then the Bears had to turn all of those gift basket worth of picks into something as they go. Well, guess what? It started to turn into something. And I wanted to know whether one of the players, a certain guy in the QB1 role, Caleb Williams, had ever really kind of let himself soak in the details of the trade that went down on March 10th, 2020. Remember, Caleb was just a junior at USC going through spring practice. He didn't have any reason to be dialed in on the transaction wire of the NFL at that moment. And so when he came to his press conference on Wednesday afternoon, I asked him what he knew about the trade. I had a little short back and forth. Let's play that, and then we'll jump off from there.
Yeah, I know about it a little bit. Not too much, obviously. Grateful that it happened. It would be a Chicago Bear. I'm not too deep into the history of kind of what happened, but I do know it got us a bunch of different things, DJ and picks and myself included.
Do you know what all those picks turned into?
Off
the top, do you have any?
Not off the top. Okay. Not off the top, but it's
Darnell and
yeah, it's a
you and DJ. And
yeah, it's a. Now I know, but it's a good collection of players that we have here.
So what you couldn't hear there was me recounting the number of players that the Bears have gotten. DJ Moore, obviously, then Darnell Wright, then Tyreek Stevenson, then Caleb Williams, then Torrey Taylor. Oh, by the way, they still have a 2025 second round pick from the Panthers that they can use next spring. And when I told that to Torrey Taylor in the locker room on Wednesday, he goes, "That's crazy. It's still one more coming." and it is crazy. There is one more coming. And so crazy to look at the haul, particularly when you compare it with what happened with Carolina. They go all in on Bryce Young. They believe he's the guy that's going to change the trajectory of their franchise. 11 games into his rookie season, they fire his coach. You know, the season ends, they fire the GM that drafted him. 2 games into his second season, the new coach benches him for Andy Dalton, and it looks like he's got no future in the Panthers organization, and he's just sitting in a recycling bin waiting for the truck to come by, you know? And so you compare that to this flood of starters and key contributors the Bears have. And oh, by the way, one more coming in the spring of 2025. And you go, man, this is absolutely a win for the Bears. There's still some nuance we can get into in a second. But in order for them to maximize the value, Caleb's got to become what Caleb is supposed to be. And then these other players have to turn into something. In the Bears' favor column, you've got 2 players already in Tyreek Stevenson and Torrey Taylor who have sealed wins for them this year. One with a pick 6, one with 2 punts last week, and were defensive player of the week in the NFC and special teams player of the week in the NFC. And so the trend is moving in the right direction. And then ultimately for Ryan Poles to be the ultimate genius, or the quote unquote guru man, as Tyreek Stevenson called him, they're going to have to squeeze the most out of all those players to really rub it in on the Panthers.
I didn't actually realize that Torrey Taylor in a circumvented way ended up being a result of that trade. So he ends up being
chosen with the Eagles pick.
Right.
That the Bears got from trading back from 9 to 10, which they used to do on Darnell Wright. So it's the Panthers pick, and then they turn that into 2 picks, one of them being the one they use on Torrey Taylor. The footnote on this is the second round pick in 2023 that they used on Tyreek Stevenson. They had to trade up 5 spots, so they did send a fifth rounder that year to the Jaguars, who then at that spot at, like, I think it was 136 or somewhere around there, took a guy I've never heard of. So
the Jags tend to do that. This trade is already one of the most lopsided trades you will see in NFL history. I mean, the simple fact that if you take everything else away,
Bryce Young is done.
The Bryce Young is done, and that the trade ended up netting the Bears the number one overall pick the next season. Like, that right there is a massive win. Like, you traded the number one overall pick, and the first round pick you got back becomes the number one overall pick. That's obviously something you can't predict. And, you know, I think that everyone knew that that pick was probably going to be top 10, but number one overall, I mean, a lot has to happen. And obviously the Panthers made a lot of bad happen, but like the fact that that happened was a monumental win. And you add in everything else. I mean, DJ Moore, I was thinking about this today. Like, I knew he was a really pretty good receiver before he got here, but I just hadn't observed the Panthers enough to know how good he was. And then you watch him for 17 games and you're like, man, this guy's awesome. Like, he is an incredible receiver. And the fact that they were able to get him is ridiculous, honestly.
Well, like, it's doubly ridiculous when you know that the Panthers were going all in on a young quarterback. And what they did moment was take away one of the guys that could have provided him instant success. You know, how many times have we seen DJ Moore take a short pass and turn it into a big gain? And you say, boy, that would be nice for a number one overall pick trying to find his feet in the league. Instead, Bryce Young gets sacked 62 times in 16 starts as a rookie. He's broken. He can't perform in year two. He goes through a regime change. It's all a mess in Carolina. And you go, wow. The personal analogy I use for this particular trade, when you talk about you had the number one pick, and oh, by the way, you still had the number one pick. You just had to wait a year, and you waited a year in a year where there was a generational talent coming up through the quarterback pipeline that you could pounce on. A few summers ago, we were in Hilton Head, and we were coming back on a flight that they were overbooked on. Had to start offloading people from the flight. And I went up to the counter and asked, okay, what are you offering here? And the woman at the gate said, sit put, this thing's going to go pretty high. By the end of the day, my son and I were offered $1,500 flight vouchers to take a flight that got us back into Chicago 2 hours later than the original flight was scheduled to land. And so you stop, and all throughout that day, you're going, this is too good to be true. This makes no sense. They just gave us $3,000 in flight credit to get home 2 hours later. You know, like, that to me is basically what Ryan Poles did here. He's like, oh, really? You're going to give me all that? And obviously he didn't know at the time that the Panthers were going to nosedive so badly and they were going to wind up with the number one pick and it was going to be in the Caleb Williams draft, obviously. But man, you just talk about a no lose situation in so many ways. The other part of this, studs, is I would say this is CJ Stroud's production is a footnote on the trade.
Oh, absolutely.
Bears obviously had an opportunity to use that number one pick in 2023 on CJ Stroud if they so desire. They decided to give Justin Fields another year to prove himself as a franchise quarterback. And we can't separate that entirely from the discussion. Even though the Bears have won in the trade with Carolina, you still have to kind of see if CJ Stroud goes on and wins five Super Bowls, you say, oh, well, maybe that didn't turn out as good as it should have for the Bears.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's absolutely part of the discussion that needs to contextualize the whole thing. And what else is interesting is, you know, I don't know how confirmed this really was, but there was a lot of smoke. And I can't remember if Ryan Poles said this directly, but they had, it sounded like the works of trading back twice. And one of those trades would have been with the Texans. So the Texans themselves weren't exactly all in on CJ Stroud. And I think that that's like, it's, goes into the discussion of nobody saw CJ Stroud being as good as he was. It has become as fast as he's become good. So like that's a whole nother tangent there. So yeah, it's something that we'll have to keep an eye on. And like the fact that they got Caleb Williams and we can look at him and say, we like where this is heading makes you not get too worried about the CJ Stroud, and especially because CJ Stroud is in another division in another conference, and ideally you don't have to worry about him and let it every 4 years or so. And then if you play him in the Super Bowl,
no right? Doubt.
So like, it's not something that overly, if like, you know, look, if God forbid the Packers had gotten him, you know,
right.
Like that would be something. It's like, geez, what did we do? So anyway, you got anything else on this, Dan, before we move on and wrap up?
No, obviously that's going to be a big part, I would imagine, of the broadcast on Sunday. That trade is going to forever be on social media, floating around with the net haul that the Bears got from the Panthers. Pretty fascinating to watch. Pretty fun this week to talk to some of the players that were involved, ultimately chosen by the Bears with the picks that they got from Carolina.
And we'll wrap things up like we usually do with our 2 minutes.
The 2 minute drill.
All right, what do we got today, Dan? I know we want to make sure we update the injury report, but also make sure we note Torrey Taylor, NFC Special Teams Player of the Week after his fantastic game against the Rams.
Yeah, the footnote for me on that one is Richard Hightower came in a day after we talked to Torrey Taylor and just talked about how driven and competitive Torrey Taylor has been since he got here. Torrey Taylor thought he had, in his words, a D game in Indianapolis in that loss and was pretty frustrated with how he performed in Indianapolis. And then he comes back on Sunday and gives you an A-plus game, right? And does the things that justify his selection as a fourth-round pick for this team. Really fun to watch him reap the rewards of that performance on Sunday. So that's a big deal as they move going forward. You mentioned the injury report. Tevin Jenkins back at practice Thursday, limited participant with the ribs injury he has, trending in the direction of him playing. If he can't go, I think they would stick with the same alignment they finished last week with Nate Davis at right guard, Matt Pryor at left guard, and everything else status quo across the front. We'll see where that heads. And also Keenan Allen, a full participant this week off the injury report. Let's hope he stays off for a little while and is able to not only be healthy but productive as the Bears go forward.
Yeah, I hope that Keenan Allen can get going a little bit more this week. You watch, like, and I'm trying to give him a lot of leeway here because his foot has been hurt, and you know, you wonder how well he's really been able to run. So, like, hopefully we see him literally get more up to speed and get more involved in the passing game. And as my last point on Torrey Taylor, like, the simple fact that your punter had a palpable contribution to winning a game is – it doesn't happen much. And you get the sense that, I mean, he can do this damn near every week. And I was waiting to see – what we saw Sunday from him, because I started laughing when you started talking about how he said that he had a D game, and I didn't know you were going to say against the Colts. Yeah. I was like, if that's his D game, geez, because right. I thought you were going to say against the Rams. But anyway, that a punter that can do that kind of thing is, I mean, now I know why Iowa fans liked him so much, because that guy, that's something else. That 66-yard punt that puts a team inside the 10-yard line. I mean, there's not a lot of guys in the history of the league that can do that on a consistent basis.
Well, and you now have two phases of your team that can close a game. Your special teams and your defense can close a game. If the offense can catch up, now you take the leap from good to great, and you have a complete team that's able to do it in that realm. Last footnote for me here today, Studs, and I feel like I've used the word footnote like way too much on this episode. It's like something that's in my vernacular today for some reason. But NFLPA Executive Director Lloyd Howell popped through the building today to talk to players. He also stopped in the media room to have a little debriefing with reporters. The 18-game schedule is something that is going to be a hot topic of conversation for a while. It has to be collectively bargained. The NFL seems to be pushing, and they want to capitalize on the opportunity to add more games, more inventory, more TV money, all those things. To get that, the NFLPA is going to have to make requests. It seems like the biggest one on their docket right now is a restructuring of the offseason and adding a different rhythm to OTAs and minicamp and training camp, and really talking very strongly about bringing players back in July to start the ramp up to the regular season then, as opposed to the very last week of July. You would start very early July and revise some of the spring part. Interesting to keep an eye on as those discussions sort of escalate and move forward. But good to meet in person for the first time NFLPA Executive Director Lloyd Howell, who obviously replaced DeMaurice Smith.
Yeah, I do remember during the summer, one of the Bears players being asked about the idea of moving the schedule back. I can't remember who it was, but it's something we can dig up later. But I do remember that being part of the discussion, is that, you know, an adjusted training camp, it's if we have to sacrifice a longer ramp up than they might have to, or not sacrifice, but build in a longer ramp up.
Yeah, they want to have a longer lead up time, and the PA asserts that they've got data that says, the science says that helps players stay healthier going into the regular season. So we'll see what direction that goes. But we've covered a lot of good ground, and it's Bears Panthers week, week five. Yeah. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. So we'll wrap it up. Dan, thanks a lot for everything you brought to us today. Thanks. If you've been listening, thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you Sunday at some point, when we usually do, after Bears and Panthers at Soldier Field. And hopefully, I don't even want to think about the alternative. Hopefully it's after a win. And so thanks for listening to the Take the North podcast presented by Odyssey. Download, listen, subscribe, tell a friend about us, and we'll keep moving forward, and we'll talk to you on Sunday.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.